Welcome to our final presentation for mutual funds, investments for the masses. And in this presentation, we're going to take a look at some fund families, some of the perks surrounding mutual funds and mutual fund transactions and the like. And then we'll focus on a single mutual fund. We'll go from the many, the 12,000, to one that's been around for over 90 years. And finally, we'll see that mutual fund investors, on the whole, don't do as well as the mutual funds they invest in. That doesn't make any sense. You'll see why. Slide number 62. Fund families. A family of funds exists when one investment company manages a group of mutual funds. You see, many years ago, decades ago, a mutual fund company might have had one, maybe two mutual funds. But competition, all of a sudden we need global mutual funds and international mutual funds, and we need small cap funds and mid cap funds, and we need growth funds and equity income funds. And so the industry exploded. So now some of these fund families have hundreds of funds. The funds in the family vary in their objectives, and of course we need to do research on any individual fund that we want to invest in. But the good thing about this is you can move your money from one fund to another almost always with no charge. They're not going to hit you with another upfront sales charge or whatever. Be careful, some of them will charge for excessive transfers within the fund family. If you remember, we saw some people who were doing things like selling the fund and then buying it back the next day. No, we're trying to discourage that. We don't want people to be doing those kind of things or timing the market. However, if the fund is in a taxable account, the IRS says, oh yeah, you need to talk to us, because the IRS considers that a sale of one investment and a purchase of another investment. If it's in your retirement account or educational savings account, or what is called a tax-qualified account, a health savings account, then no, that doesn't generate a taxable transaction. And many years ago, I wish I had come up with this, Forbes said it best. Choose a family, not a fund. Right, exactly. It makes sense for you to choose a fund family, assuming that it's a family that's been around for a long time, done well in good times and bad times, and certainly has the choices that you need. Mm-hmm. Slide number 62. I'm sorry, 63. Here are the top 10 fund families. Well, not really. The problem is getting this information is a little tricky. You would think that the Investment Company Institute would publish that, but they don't. At least I haven't been able to find it. If you can, please do. Because different sources will have the 10 fund families differently. I have a couple of different links on the website and in Canvas that you can take a look at. And I know both of them are not right. I'm pretty sure of that. And also, people get confused. Many people put BlackRock as the largest fund family. No, BlackRock is the largest money manager in the world, but it is not the largest mutual fund company. The largest mutual fund company is Vanguard. And for many years, it was Fidelity. But as we saw, Vanguard pioneered index funds and has been very, very popular with those. BlackRock also pioneered ETF index funds. They're called iShares. And now they have, you know, they also have actively managed funds. So does Vanguard. Vanguard, you know, Vanguard talks great about index funds, but they still have a lot of actively managed funds. And I always say, when people say, well, Vanguard says you can't beat the index, well, how come they still have their actively managed funds? And some of them do. Vanguard has that Prime Cap, which is a great company. They spun off from American Funds many years ago. And they have Wellington Capital Management, which is another great actively managed company for many decades. Now, third and fourth, every year is a little different. Pretty sure that Fidelity is a little bit ahead of Capital Group American Funds, but it doesn't matter. They both go back to the 1930s. And Fidelity, as we said, was the largest mutual fund company, and they pioneered the hot, you know, fund manager, the star manager. Well, it worked great for them with some other funds like the Contra Fund and the Magellan Fund and a few others. But it didn't work so great with them with some other funds. So they now have a lot of index funds. So check them out, especially that Contra Fund. The guy is a genius, but he's getting old like me, so he's going to have to retire soon. And boy, they're going to have a hard time filling his shoes. American funds, now, they're a little strange. They weren't called the American funds when they started. They were called Capital Research and Management. But they have funds like the Investment Company of America and the Growth Fund of America and Washington Mutual Investors Fund and American Mutual Fund. Really boring mutual funds. And so people started calling them the American funds because they were the Income Fund of America, the Bond Fund of America. And so they said, okay, I guess we're the American funds. But lately, they've been wanting to go internationally, global. So they don't want to be called American funds outside the United States. So they're changing their name back to what it was to begin with, Capital. If they had asked me, which of course they didn't, I would have said, look, do what Panasonic does and other companies. You be the American funds in the United States of America, and then outside you'll be Capital Group. See, Panasonic isn't called Panasonic in Japan. I think it's called Standard or something, or National. And same thing with some other companies like Danone. You know, they change their name depending on where they are. In France, it's Danone. Yeah. So, but that's, you know, that they're a lot wealthier than I am, a lot smarter than I am, so that's okay. But I'm a big fan of American funds. The next group is State Street Global Advisors. It used to be State Street Bank and Trust. Remember the custodians? Right. This company started out, I don't know if they only started out doing that, but they started out as a trust company working as the custodians, offering services to mutual funds as the custodians. And then they started their own mutual funds. And so now they're very large and they have the Spiders, the real cute named ETF Spiders. Another storied company that's been around for decades, very good company in my humble opinion, is T. Rowe Price. Based actually in Baltimore. Oh, by the way, Vanguard's in outside Philly, BlackRock's in New York, I think. These companies are all over the world. Fidelity is in Boston. American Funds is in Los Angeles, if you can believe that. State Street is in Boston. Boston is the birthplace of the mutual fund industry in the United States with Massachusetts Financial Services and Fidelity and a few others. Putnam, I think Putnam is in Boston, but not anymore. They're all over the world. But check out T. Rowe Price. They've got some dynamite funds, and they normally sell directly to investors like Vanguard. Of course, you know, you can go to a financial advisor who could recommend you and will charge you accordingly. Invesco is a little strange. It used to be Oppenheimer, another storied, long-lived mutual fund company based, believe it or not, in Denver, was purchased by Invesco. So they changed all the names, which is sad because Oppenheimer it's still there, but they're not called Oppenheimer Funds anymore. Some really great, especially that global fund that they had, which was around for decades. Now, DFA, Dimensional Fund Advisors. I don't really know a lot about this company, but they're very popular with brokers, with financial advisors. And they have some very good funds that shine, but I don't work with them at all. And then PIMCO, Pacific Investment Company, is based, believe it or not, in Newport Beach. And for many years, they had the world's largest bond fund. And a gentleman by the name of Bill Gross, who we'll come back to later on, is a bond, was a bond, still, he's working, but I'm not sure if he's actively working as much as he was because he's in retirement age. But he left. He went to another company, and PIMCO sort of took it on the chin for a while there. And then Franklin Templeton. You know, again, another Templeton. We'll talk about Sir John Templeton when we get to stocks. But Franklin is based up in the Northern California area. Again, they're all over the world. But they have some dynamite funds. But they've done a few things that I've really questioned. They bought Legg Mason. Remember the Legg Mason Value Trust, which is now Clearbridge Value Trust. But hey, you know, they're trying to do their best. So this is just 10 of the many fund families that are out there. So you don't have to limit yourself. We put 6 links to 6 of these companies. I think, who do we put? Vanguard, Fidelity, American, T. Rowe Price, Franklin Templeton, and and Dodge & Cox. Dodge & Cox is a company that's been around since the 30s, but they're really different than everybody else. They're based actually in San Francisco. Excuse me. And you would think, you know, San Francisco. And I go to their website and watch their insights and their commentaries. And like most all these companies will let you go to their websites, even if you're not a customer, and check out what they're saying about the markets, what they believe is, you know, their strategies and the like. And Dodge & Cox has done really, really well since 1931 or something like that. You go to their website and you're thinking, it's San Francisco. They're going to be very, cosmopolitan and everything. And they all look like they're from Kansas. I'm not trying to disparage the Midwest, you know, but it's a very different culture. It's kind of a real homespun. And I've just always been blown away. And my little, what they're called, contrarian indicators, is the boring companies like American, T. Rowe Price, BlackRock, Dodge & Cox, these boring mutual fund companies that have been around for decades and have done well in good times and bad, they've been lagging lately because it's all been about the high growth companies, the FANGs, now they're called the Magnificent Sevens. And so to my mind, that means it's about time for the worm to turn. It's about time for the boring companies to shine, because they go in cycles. In the late 90s, people like American Funds and T. Rowe Price and Dodge & Cox were considered fuddy-duddies until the .com revolution became a .com, and then they looked like geniuses. So, you know, it goes in cycles. But do check these out. Check these out. And if you have a 401k at work or whatever, check out the mutual funds that are available in your 401k, 403b, because part of your assignment is to research at least 2 different mutual funds. Download the annual report. Read everything you can about them. Go to Morningstar. Go to Lipper, Yahoo, whatever. And go to the library. Oh, my goodness, you've been to a library, right? Check out everything you can about them and have fun. I hope so. because the assignments are really not that hard. You're finding out information about individual investments. But what I love about them, at least from my point of view, is that they're entirely open-ended. You don't have to stop with the questions we put on the assignment. You can just keep right on going and learning more and more. And I tell people, I'm going to tell you in other commentaries and the like, get lost. In a nice way, of course. Not get lost, get out of here. But get lost in that don't think you have to just stop after you've done what was on the assignment. Because we hope that you get excited and your interest is piqued and you want to start researching their competitors and their other funds that they have, and maybe checking out this one because maybe this is a little too conservative for you, or maybe it's a little too aggressive for you. Well, let's see what else they have. And with 12,000 mutual funds, there's never any end to what you can keep learning. One of the most smartest marketing companies is Fidelity. You go to their website and you can buy, 10,000 different mutual funds? They'll sell their competitors' mutual funds, not only their own. They have about 500 or so, but they'll sell their competitors. So this is part of investing that I love, and other people don't really like it, and other people do. So it's up to you. Have fun. And remember that if you really don't like this when you do the assignments, as I say in the commentaries, that's a good sign also. It just means that maybe you need an investment advisor. You want somebody to help you. If you do, that's a good sign that you could be your own investment advisor and really thoroughly enjoy it, as well as, you know, be profitable. Okay, enough of that. Slide 64. Let's take a look at some of the services that mutual funds offer, which make mutual funds very, very popular choices with people just because they're so convenient. Automatic investment plans. All mutual funds have a system for you to automatically invest periodically. It's called dollar cost averaging, which is really a bad name. I've tried to come up with a better name, systematic investment plan, automatic investment plan. They don't sound as exciting either. But the mutual fund service that allows shareholders to automatically send fixed amount of monies from their paychecks or bank accounts into the fund. You see, there's an old saying in the industry, pay yourself first, right? On the first of the month or when you get your paycheck or whatever, instead of, you know, paying Ford Motor Credit Corporation or Nike's bill or whatever it is, J-Jill, your credit card with J-Jill, or whatever, Target, whatever. You pay yourself first, $50, $100 a month. In my humble opinion, this is the absolute best way to invest in a mutual fund. You don't worry about whether it's a good time to invest or a bad time to invest. Every month is a good time to invest $50 or whatever that comes right out of your paycheck or your checking account. And here's the key. For the vast majority of us working grunts, it's practically the only way most people are going to invest. You'll hear people say, "Oh, I want to wait till I got about $5,000 and I'll start investing." Like, yeah, when's that going to happen? Get started now. The next wonderful service is the automatic reinvestment plan. See, mutual funds, if you don't ask for it, will automatically, by default, reinvest all distributions of dividends, interest, capital gains back into the fund. You see what I'm saying? The mutual fund service automatic reinvestment plan enables shareholders to automatically buy additional shares in the fund through the reinvestment of dividends, interest, and capital gains. And no, they're not going to charge you another, you know, sales charge or anything like that. Automatic investment plans allow an investor to earn fully compounded rate of returns. Now, unless you need the income, and some people do, right? Some people want to live off the income. But unless you need the income, it is always a good idea to reinvest dividends and capital gains received from a mutual fund. And by the way, that's the default. There'll be a little checkbox that says, you know, check here if you do not want your dividends and capital gains and interest to be reinvested automatically. So this is the default because you want the total compounded rate of return, and that's how you do it. And of course, the mutual fund company takes care of all the little transactions and stuff. So you wind up with 0.45 shares or whatever, and you don't worry about that. They take care of all that for you. Now, how are you going to take the money out? Well, it depends on your goal, of course, what you wanted to do with this money. But assuming it's for retirement, a systematic withdrawal plan is an awesome way for you to withdraw the money. So you set it up with your bank so that every month or quarterly or annually, whatever, a certain amount or percentage is automatically transferred into your checking account. Very cool. Now, here's the deal. Okay, here's the deal, right? You start putting $50 or $100 a month or more if you can afford it in your 20s or 30s for 30, 40 years, and then you start taking out $2,000 or $3,000 a month for the rest of your life. How's that? Will that work for you? Or if you start earlier with more money, you can take out even more. I think it's a pretty good deal. Now, we talked about the exchange privilege, the conversion privilege. When you're in a family of funds, this privilege allows you to move your money from one fund to another without having any charges or anything, you know, assuming you don't do anything stupid like, you know, sell it one day and buy it back the other day, and some companies won't let you do that, first of all, like American and Vanguard say, well, you have to leave it, you know, you sold it, now you can't buy it back for 30 days. Other companies say, sure, you can do that, but we're going to hit you with a 2% fee, you goofball. You're not supposed to do that. Mutual funds are not trading vehicles, unless you go with ETFs, in which case the brokerage firm doesn't care. And yeah, so ETFs, you can do that. But remember, if it's not in a retirement account or an educational savings account or a health savings account, the IRS is going to say, hey, you know, you got to declare this as a taxable transaction. And you may have to pay taxes, may not if you had a loss, and you're not going to pay taxes if it's a loss. Okay, so how do you buy mutual funds? Well, we've already been talking a little bit about this. ETFs, closed-end funds, which are not really popular, you buy through a stock exchange. Open-end, you can buy through your broker, directly from the investment company, and I think the best way, of course, is automatic contributions, as we've already mentioned. Sell options, right. Closed-end, ETFs, you do it through your stock exchange. Remember, if you go with a company like Vanguard or Fidelity and you buy their ETFs, they're not going to charge you any commission. And you might say, well, my broker doesn't charge any commission. Yes, they do. Wait till chapter 3. Open-end, through your broker, through your mutual fund company, and in my humble opinion, the best way is automatic withdrawals, assuming this is for, you know, retirement, for living income. Of course, if you're saving this for college education or a down payment on a house, then you're going to, you know, you're not going to do automatic withdrawals over every month. You're going to say, I need, you know, the $12,000 now, or the $24,000 or whatever it is. Okay. All right, now taxes. Slide 68. You know, we shouldn't let taxes be the tail that wags the dog. And some people do. They're always worried about taxes. Taxes are the price we pay to live in a civilized society. Having said that, nobody likes to pay them, and I don't blame you. I don't like to pay them either. There are two types of taxes for regular accounts. There are income dividends, which are typically taxed as income depending on what type of income they are. If they're from dividends, they're going to be taxed at a lower rate. If they're from interest, they're going to be taxed at a higher rate. Capital gains distributions are the other type, and they typically, if they are long-term, taxed at a much more advantageous rate. If they're short-term, which means under a year, then they're taxed as if they were income you earned at a company as an employee. Reinvested dividends and capital gains are still taxable transactions. So sometimes it causes some people anger. You know, there's a down year, 2022 or whatever, and their mutual fund lost money. Okay, but they still were, they still received some end of year or quarterly dividend distributions throughout the year. So they get a 1099 form from their mutual fund company or their brokerage firm saying, hey, you know, you made some money, you have to pay taxes on this. And the investor turns around and goes, wait a minute, I lost money last year. You mean I still have to pay taxes? So they go to their congressperson, and scream and holler, and the congressperson kind of just says, oh, well, you know, maybe someday we'll work it out so that you only pay taxes when you make money, which, in other words, it's not going to happen. It's just not going to happen. Every once in a while, somebody makes some noises about unrealized capital gains, in other words, paper profits, would not be taxed until you sold your mutual fund shares. It would create an accounting nightmare. But then again, the tax code is very broken and it does create an accounting nightmare for most of us. So who knows, it might just happen. But just remember that sometimes you may lose money, but you still have to pay some taxes. Now, at first, it's not going to be a whole lot of money, folks. You know, if you're in a regular account and you're putting $50 a month away, it's going to take several years, but eventually it's going to be a lot of money. You're going to be hit with some serious taxes, and for which I say congratulations. Right? That means your investments have done well. Your mutual funds have returned good returns, and you're getting some rolling, some dough coming in. So yeah, we're always, as much as we begrudge the tax, paying them the taxes, it's a good thing. It's a champagne problem. Now, if indeed you're putting this money into your 401k, your Roth IRA, your educational savings account, your health savings account, what the IRS calls tax qualified accounts, then you don't worry about this every year. You don't get a 1099. You don't have to worry about it. you only worry about it when the money is taken out. If it's in a Roth IRA and you are 59 and a half and you've done everything that you're supposed to do and they've done what they're supposed to do, then it's tax-free. Well, IRS doesn't like that. They like the term tax-exempt. And that's very cool. And we'll discuss these later on. But if you really want to know about them now, you know, contact me and I can talk about this far longer than any reasonable person would ever want to listen. So that's taxes. Slide 69. Now, where do we get our information? Well, in your assignment, you're going to choose a couple of mutual funds. And again, there are six links to six companies that I think are great companies, four of which I think are awesome companies. And but there are just dozens and dozens of mutual fund companies and thousands of different funds, so you decide. We want you to download the prospectus and the annual report. Now, there's a commentary on the prospectus for the sample mutual fund that we're going to take a look at in a few moments on the website in Canvas, so check that out. Or just, you know, find the prospectus. It's usually under literature or publications when you're looking up the mutual fund on their website. And I know it's a very important document that nobody reads. Describes the risk factors, the fund's past performance, the types of investments, the information about dividends, distributions, taxes, who's the fund managers. Ooh. And in the face-to-face class, I pass these things out. I literally say, let's take a look. In fact, as you're thumbing through it, something should look familiar. Yes, the information from the presentation on fees should look very familiar. It's in there. It's really not that hard. I know it's written in such a way as to be useful only for insomnia, but you really should familiarize yourself with what's in the prospectus, although nobody does. I told you a little story about my boss at the brokerage firm looking at me like I was three eyes in the middle of my forehead because I actually read the prospectus. And he goes, I don't know anybody's ever read a prospectus. I've been in the industry over 20 years. I've never read a prospectus. And then the annual report. Download the annual report. The first several pages will be, you know, fairly easy to read. And then it's going to get really, you know, lots of numbers and scary stuff. But do your best. And remember that the mutual fund company is going to put their best foot forward. We're going to download some stock mutual annual reports later on in the semester. So realize that they're doing their best to make everything sound good. And if they're smart and if there's bad news, they're going to be truthful. They're going to say, you know what, we didn't do that well this year, but look how well we've done over the last 10 years or whatever. So check out the prospectus and the annual report for the funds that you will use for your assignment for chapter 2. Now, there are manifold, you like the word manifold? It means many, publications, websites. For many years, the Lipper was the big Mahatma for mutual fund research. And then Morningstar burst on the scene and said they're going to make it more sexy, and they've done their best. And Lipper used to be a pay-only website, but now it's a little strange. I've gone to Lipper. I kind of have a hard time figuring out what they're doing right now because they were bought by, I think, two different people. But Morningstar is certainly much more profitable and much more popular now. When you go to Morningstar's website, every 5 minutes they're going to pop up a box trying to get you to sign up for their $20 or $50 a month or whatever. And you can go to the library. Business Week, Forbes. I like Forbes. Again, it's available at the library. Kiplinger's, I haven't read them in a long time. Or Money, I haven't read them in a long time. But again, libraries are cool. Go have some fun in the library. Eventually, we're going to learn how to use the Value Line, which is the best. And they're available at the library. They have these surveys and rate different funds. I'm not a big fan of these things because they turn it into a bit of a popularity contest. Especially Morningstar. They have their star ratings from 1 to 5. And they've gotten better. They've definitely gotten better. And they took some of the criticism to heart. Because some of the funds would have a 5 1 year and then a 1 the next year. Excuse me. Mutual funds are long-term investments. It doesn't make sense that it would be your best in 1 year and then the worst in the next year. No. So they've smoothed out the rating system. They're human too. And they make mistakes. And to their credit, they've tried to rectify that star system that they call it. How about websites? Again, Morningstar, Businessweek, finance.yahoo.com. Used to be really good. It's still okay. And then the mutual fund companies' internet sites really are just one of my favorite. But I know. I don't do Faceplant or Titter. I'm sorry, Farcebook, Bitter. I'm not sorry. But I do go to T. Rowe Price and Vanguard and Capital Group and Dodge and Cox and Franklin Templeton, and especially Dodge and Cox. Really like Dodge and Cox and T. Rowe Price's websites for their insight and their perspectives. And they have to be very careful in the industry when you give what are called forward-looking statements. Because if you say, we're going to do really, really well next year, and you don't, you can get sued. So they have all this couched language that the lawyers tell them to use. But when they lower their guard, and especially when companies that are boring, like T. Rowe Price and Capital Group and Dodge & Cox, when they say things like, we're really, really excited about this individual investment, I sit up and take notice. And then check out Fidelity, and whatever you can listen to by the guy from Contrafund. I've already mentioned him, Will Danoff. Will Danoff. He's going to retire soon, I think, but he's brilliant. I've listened to him several times, and I just love listening to him. And the one thing I'll it's up to you, of course. Everybody follows their own individuals. I look for people who have humility and a bit of a sense of humor, because if you don't have humility and can't laugh at yourself, this industry will really chew you up. Yeah. And then the motherlode, the Investment Company Institute website, ICI.org. If you're so inclined, check out their annual fact book. It's the, and as I said, it's really strange, because you would think that it would be ranking the mutual fund industry by size, but they don't. I guess because they don't want to anger their members, because it's a nonprofit group. It's a trade group. And of course, they get their funding from the different mutual fund companies. So I guess they don't want to anger any of their constituents. Okay. Oh my goodness. Are you exhausted yet? Oh, I know. It is exhausting. All the information you've learned about mutual funds. And now, how do I pick one, Piano? Everything you've said is great, but how do I pick a mutual fund? Well, I warned you already, it's not easy. Once you've chosen your fund, or maybe two funds to start off with, then it's very easy, because then they do all the work. You just have to sit around and watch what they do and check them every 6 months, a year or so. But to choose a mutual fund is not easy. And when you ask people how they did it, they usually won't give you a good answer. They might say, it's often because some goofball on the television told them to buy it, or maybe they got suckered in by the advertising, or whatever the reason was. Maybe it was because that's what they had available at their 401k. But my advice, for what it's worth, on slide 72, is to pick a mutual fund that invests in high quality stocks or bonds. Now, I'm already punting, aren't I? Because quality is in the eyes of the beholder. But it's kind of like art. I know it when I see it, right? Invest in companies, in my humble opinion, that are large, have been around for decades, have their roots deep in the economy, and have held up during good times and, more importantly, bad times. Well diversified across several industries, sectors of the economy, and personally, I like global, because I want my mutual fund managers to be able to go anywhere in the world and find the best companies. A mutual fund that has a long-term perspective and a manager, or better yet, a management team with many years of experience. Now, I'm not talking about a committee, because I don't know if you've ever worked in academia. Committees? I'm semi-retired now, so I'm not on any committees, but committees would drive me nuts. They just said, what are we going to do? Let's stop talking. Let's do something. No. Some of my favorite mutual fund companies have what are called management teams. They all work together to do the research, but they make their own decisions. So one company might be buying, one manager might be buying a certain company, a tire company or whatever. The other manufacturer might be selling that company. And that's perfectly all right. They have that dynamism, that they're bouncing ideas off of one another. And some people, it makes sense for them. And some people, no, I don't want that. So that is my favorite way of investing. Okay. Everyone's different. The other one that was promulgated by Fidelity for many years was the STAR system, the STAR manager. And that's that guy, Will Danoff, I told you about it, ContraFund. He's brilliant. He's a genius. There's a guy at Fidelity who does the Dynatech fund. Great fund. Just amazing. He got hit hard, though, during the tech crash when tech got hammered 2022. So that's the downside, right? You live by the sword, you die by the sword. Whereas a team, different managers have different strengths. Some might be more growth-oriented, some might be more dividend-oriented or conservative. And so you tend to smooth out those ups and downs. My humble opinion, you want to avoid companies that shuffle their managers every few years. Now, most companies are not doing this anymore. This was the Fidelity model. If you read the stories about the old man of Fidelity, the granddaughter's now in charge. Oh my God, forget his name. My apologies, but the son was Ned, and then Edward. No, that's not true. But he said, look, this is a business. The proof is in the pudding. You throw a kid into, here you go, kid, here's $1 billion. How are you going to do with it? What are you going to do with it? And if he does well or she does well, great. If not, they're out the door. It's part of the industry. Well, that's great when you pick somebody like a Peter Lynch. it is not great if you pick somebody who does poorly. And it incentivizes the new kids on the block. And I use the kid, jokingly, but because they're not children, they're young adults who are very, very good at what they do, or at least they look like they're going to be very good at what they do. They haven't been tested yet. They're not stupid. They know that if they don't produce in the next 2 years, they're out the door. So it incentivizes them to take larger risks, larger bets. And that's great if the bets turn out. That's not great if the bets don't turn out. So that's why I recommend staying away from funds like that. And you'll notice that's becoming less and less common. More and more companies are putting people together, having them work as teams, and not looking for that star. The most important thing, in my humble opinion, for a mutual fund is its longevity. Yeah, I know that, Payano, what about people who just started last week or last year? Maybe they're really good. Sure. But I want to know how well you did over 10, 20, 30, 50 years. I want to know how well you've done consistently in good times and, more importantly, in bad times. Don't tell me how well you've done in good times. I'm not interested. I want to know how you did when the organic matter hit the ventilating device and everybody was running around saying, ooh, is it too late to get out? Right, because we know those times are going to come. We don't know when, we know they're going to come, and we don't want our managers doing what we don't want to do, and that's panic. Don't just do anything, sit there. Yeah, so that's my advice. Follow it the best you can or the worst you can. You decide if it makes any sense to you. Okay, so here we zoom in on slide 73. To a sample mutual fund, just one out of 12,000. Now, we chose this mutual fund for various reasons. One of them is that it's 90 years old. Is that long enough for you? Remember we said 8, 9, 10% from stocks? Well, this mutual fund has been burping out, I think as of December 31st, 2023, 11.99%. 12%. Not bad. Now, I'm like trying to sell you Investment Company of America. No. In the face-to-face class, we would now pass out some literature and show some documents, which you're going to see in Canvas or on the website. They're on there. Make sure you go to them. Actually, I really should show you them just to make sure that you don't get lost here. Let me go and just show you where they are. Of course, they're in Canvas. So let's go to Introduction to Investments and slide down to Chapter 2. I should have had this ready, shouldn't I? Yeah, mutual funds investment. Here it is. Where did it go? Come on, where did it go? Here it is, up here. A sample mutual fund. So take a look at the prospectus. There's the full one. There's the summary. Check out the commentary, the webpage. Here's 90 years of investing. So make sure you go through this commentary, video or audio. Here's the top 75 holdings. There's actually over 200 as of December 31st, 2023. But you'll see the kind of companies that a mutual fund such as this, it's a domestic, which means it's mostly United States-based, stock mutual fund, growth and income, right? It's a growth and income stock mutual fund. Invest in companies that are growing, but also paying dividends. Here's the benefit of time, the worst day, best day, and we would show these in the face-to-face class now. So you're going to go through these, okay? So make sure you go through these, listen to the commentaries, because it's very impressive. I'm not trying to sell you ICA. It's a great mutual fund, but there are many others. We're going to see some others that have done better than ICA. And what we're going to find out is that stocks are risky. When you go through these illustrations, you're going to see that it's not a straight line. No. There's going to be times when you lose some money. There's going to be times when you lose a lot of money. And you're going to go, what did Payano tell me to do? Oh, right, not panic. Don't just do something, sit there, right? Because if you look in the short term, oh boy, are in stocks risky. They can lose 20% in 1 month, 1 week, 1 day. And they've done it before. They're going to do it again. But long term, no. We've built a tremendous amount of wealth from mutual funds such as ICA and many others, simply by buying a portfolio of high quality stocks and not panicking when the markets fall. You'll hear people say, but now's not a good time to invest. Excuse me, when is it ever a good time to invest? When is there never things to worry about? Very rarely, and when those times happen, that's usually the worst time to invest because the market's gone up 200, 300, 400%. So there's another document called Worst Day, Best Day I want you to look at. What happened if you invested on the worst day of the last 20 years or invested on the best day? You would think that the worst day would do a whole lot worse than the best day, and it turns out you did pretty well in both cases. Now, of course, you are not going to choose the worst day, the best day, when you put $50 a month away or $100 a month away. Some days are going to be good, some days are going to be bad, but you're not going to worry about it. You see, it takes the emotion out of investing. What about market downturns? Keep a long-term perspective. Realize that if it all goes to zero, if the kind of companies that this type of mutual fund invest in, utilities, energy companies, healthcare companies, basic materials, and yes, some technology. If they all go to zero, it doesn't matter where your money is. We're going to be digging for beetle grubs for dinner. And I've told you already, I'm very, very optimistic about the next 20, 30 years if we don't blow ourselves up, Mr. Putin, or die in our own waste. But I'm optimistic. So, when there's a market downturn, don't panic. Keep a long-term perspective and continue to dollar cost average. I know it's a terrible name. I wish I could come up with something. Automatic investment plan, systematic investment plan. But you're going to hear dollar cost averaging. And sometimes you're going to see the minus sign here, the hyphen, and sometimes you're not going to see it. So I don't know. I sometimes use it, sometimes I don't. It's a system of buying an investment at regular intervals with a fixed dollar amount. And this is the best part about dollar cost averaging. See, when I first met my wife, she was kind of worried about investing in stocks. It took me a while to convince her that it's actually a good deal. And I'd say to her, Anita, because that's her name, Anita, no matter what happens tomorrow, there's good news. The market's up, good news. Your account is worth more, yippee. The market's down, good news. Huh? What? Yeah, next month, when you're going to get more shares at a lower price when the $50 or $100 a month comes out of your paycheck or checking account. You see? It takes the emotion out of investing. I don't have to worry about when's a good time. It's always a good time. Now, there is something I'm going to want you to memorize, but you don't have to do it now. I hope you do, but eventually, when we get to later on in the semester, I'm going to want you to memorize this. The cool thing about dollar cost averaging, it's not a guarantee, but your average cost per share should be lower than your average price per share. Now, that might not make any sense right now, but eventually it will. But just try to remember that. By using the same amount of money, when stocks are high, you're buying fewer shares. When stocks are low, you're buying more shares. So your average cost per share that you paid for the shares should be lower than the average price that you paid. Because when the price is high, you're going to buy fewer shares. When the price is low, you're going to buy more shares. Now, it's not a guarantee. It's not going to turn a lousy investment into a profit. It's not a guarantee. But it's about as boring and commonplace and simple a technique that you can use to invest. And I've told you before, and I'll tell you again, I love boring investments. So dollar cost averaging, it's a boring, silly name, maybe not silly, but just kind of not a very demonstrative name. And it's a boring technique, but it works. Ah, it works. What you're going to do, you're going to run over to the website or Canvas, and you're going to see the hypotheticals, the illustrations, the hypothetical illustrations. And you're going to see that over 90 years, ICA has done pretty darn well. But you're also going to say, Payano, I don't have a 90-year time frame. I don't wait 90 years. And so what we are showing you then, we show you this mutual fund. We can show you others. You know, just contact me if you want to see others, if you have one that you're interested in. What happens if we put $100 a month away for 30 years? That's $36,000. What does it become? What happens if we just extend our time horizon by 10 years? $400 a month for 40 years, and then see what happens. And then here's the kicker, and this is what I hope you'll think about as you put money in your 401k, your 403b, your Roth IRA. This year we'll do $100 a month, but next year we'll do $110 a month. Okay? One fewer trip to 10 bucks. I'm sorry, Starbucks, right. And then the year after that, $120 a month. And the year after that, $130 a month. Yeah, you can do it, especially if you pay down some debts, right? And that is when the compound interest really takes off. So check out the hypothetical illustrations. Now, when we do this in class, somebody usually raises their hand and says, and they're usually in their 50s or whatever, why didn't you tell me this 25 years ago? For those people, they need to do more than $100 a month. And they only have 20 years. And you're going to find that when you're younger, time is on your side. Time is your ally. When you get to be my age, time becomes your enemy. It's not on your side. And that's why we just so much adore when we get people in their 20s and early 30s started on 50 bucks a month, $100 a month. Now, don't worry. Don't do it right now, especially if you're just still in college and, you know, just trying to make ends meet. But by 25, 28, 30, 33, you still have a whole lot of time, even into your early 40s, because you're going to be working for another 30 years or so, maybe more, especially your generation. You guys are going to be in great shape. Well, we don't know, but with medical advances advancing at a tremendous rate, you should be in really good shape into your 70s and 80s and even 90s. Supposedly, the first person to live to 150 has already been born. I don't know about that, but I mean, I don't think I'm going to make it to 150, but the people being born today, who knows? So check out the hypothetical illustrations. Again, if you want any others, maybe $200 a month or whatever, check it out. What we say when we get to 401ks and 403bs is if you have an employer-sponsored plan at work, you can put a lot of money away every year. And say you're both working. If you can live off the salary of one of your spouses, and put much of the salary of the other spouse into that 401k, you do that for 5 years in your mid-20s or later 20s, early 30s, you'll never have to put another dime away in your retirement account. Not that you shouldn't. You should still and save, in my humble opinion. And a couple of couples just didn't believe me on two different occasions. I said, come on to my office. We'll run the hypotheticals. And they both, their jaws dropped. Because I could just tell that they were, you know, maybe living large because they both had good salaries. And they're thinking, you know, maybe we ought to start doing this for serious. Yeah, well, hopefully. I don't know. But maybe they did. Slide 76. And now here's the money pitch, right? As I told you, I wasn't trying to sell you Investment Company of America. We just use that because we need to use one fund. We need to, you know, look at one fund at least. But here are a couple of dozen funds that have been around for 50 years or longer and have returned better than 10%. Now, I know if you're looking at this on your phone, you can't read these. But check it out on a laptop or a desktop, and you'll see here: 1967, 11.25%; 1950, 11.33%. This is one of the most boring mutual funds you can ever imagine. It's as exciting as watching paint dry. And since 1950, it's done over 11%. There's that Fidelity Contra fund I told you about: 12.62%. Yeah, better than 12%. Fidelity's Equity Income Fund, the Fidelity Fund that's been around since 1930. There's the Magellan Fund. This is not a good choice, Payano. I really should not include the Magellan Fund. And the reason you're going to think, oh my goodness, 15.5%. Well, no. The reason the Fidelity Magellan Fund looks so much better than the others is because of one person, Peter Lynch. Between 1977 and 1990, he ran the Fidelity Magellan Fund and racked up 29% a year. So it has skewed, bent out of shape, the Magellan Fund's long-term annual returns from inception, lifetime returns. They've been coming down for years because that's just too much to ask of somebody. Five Fidelity funds. There's the Franklin Growth Fund, a little over 10%. Franklin Mutual Shares, another company that Franklin bought. Franklin's been buying companies for years. Here's a company called the Growth Fund of America. How's that for generic? And the Income Fund of America. Look, over 13% since 1973. They just made the 50-year. It's one of my favorite funds, actually. I don't normally recommend it because it's pretty volatile. It's a growth fund, but it's a good fund. And then there's the what used to be the Oppenheimer Global Fund, now it's the Invesco Fund. Well, it's done 11%. There's the Investment Company of America we just looked at. There's the oldest mutual fund company in the United States, Massachusetts Financial Services. And this is their Investors Growth Stock Fund since 1935. Their other one, their older one that's from 1924, hasn't done 10%. It's done close, 9%. New Perspective Fund, almost 12%. That's a global fund. And there's T. Rowe Price. T. Rowe Price, great company. Look at that small cap fund, 12.69% since 1956. The Dreyfus Fund is no longer called the Dreyfus Fund, but we're going to see a quote from Jack Dreyfus in future chapters. It's now called the BNY, the Bank of New York Mellon. They merged Bank of New York and Mellon Bank. Carnegie Mellon, you've heard of him. The Large Cap Securities Fund since 1951. The Templeton Growth Fund, which is now owned by Franklin. We're going to talk about Sir John Templeton in a future chapter. And then there's one of the Vanguard actively managed funds, which is not actually run by Vanguard. It's run by Wellington Capital Management, but it's a very good fund, 11%. And then another American Funds, Washington Mutual Investors Fund, since 1952. So Again, am I trying to sell you these fonts? No. In fact, I would not recommend these fonts for an investor who's just getting started out. And why is that? Well, because of history. These fonts are mostly, except for a couple, the Invesco Global Fund, the New Perspective Fund, and the Templeton Growth Fund, these are mostly all United States-based fonts. And that's just because of history. We don't start seeing global fonts until the 1970s, and so like the New Perspective started in 73, just because people didn't invest outside the United States. And then Sir John Templeton showed them, you know what, some of these countries are doing pretty well after World War II. And so that's when they started. So if you were to come to me from a clean sheet of paper, you don't have any other investments that you started, I would recommend a global fund that was similar to these funds, similar to the companies that are growth and income. You know, we want growth, we also want dividends, or maybe a growth fund if you were more aggressively minded. But I would recommend global funds. So even though we show you these because of the long-term excellent results that they've been able to put on the board, but mostly they are domestic. They are United States-based. But it's good. This is good news, don't you think? This is good news. Now, there is an awful lot more that didn't do as well. And the ones that are 50 years or older are usually gone. They're usually disappeared. It's called burying the evidence. Because when a mutual fund doesn't do well, it usually doesn't survive. It's called survivorship bias, because the industry doesn't want you to know that some of their investments aren't that good. And that's why you need to do your research. Cool? Now, one more thing. What about the investors? What types of returns do many typical mutual fund investors earn? It turns out it's not so good. Most mutual investors do worse than the mutual funds they invest in. Wait a minute, that doesn't make any sense. How could a mutual fund investor do worse than the mutual fund investment that they made, that they invested in? That doesn't make any... Yes, it does. When you take into consideration emotions. This graph is a little difficult to take a look at, but let's see if we can do that. The green bars or blue bars, whatever, blue-green bars, those are fund inflows on the positive side or outflows. The yellow line is the market return. So it starts in the year 2000 when you heard people say, blue skies, productivity gains, internet, we're all going to get rich, 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 rich. Ooh, is it too late to get in? And of course, people thought, no, it's not too late to get in. They started sending tremendous sums of money into the industry, into the mutual fund industry, just as the market turned. It had gone in two directions, up and way up, and then went in to reverse for almost 3 years in a row, 2000, 2001, and 2002. And of course, by the time it had bottomed out at 2002, people started taking their money out. Ooh, 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 is it too late to get out? Right, because in March of 2003, it started back up again. And what did people do? Ooh, they started shoving money back into the mutual fund company. Oh boy. I mean, think about it, folks. Our hero goes to the 401k meeting and sees an aggressive growth fund that's done, 16% over the last 10 years. That's where I'm going to put all my money. It then drops 70%. And he goes and says, well, where can I put my money so I don't lose any money? Oh, that's the money market account. Okay, takes all their money, puts it in the money market account after losing 70%. Then the market turns around and zooms up high. What does he do? Ah, take it out of the money market, put it back in the aggressive growth fund. Don't be one of these people. Don't do it. And notice that the cash flows continued until the Great Recession. And then by the time the market had fallen 50%, people started taking their money out like crazy. The market jumps back up and then it's very volatile. But people don't start putting their money back in until 2013 and 14. This is what we're up against as humans. We are not rational beings. We are emotional. And we allow our emotions to take charge. And it almost always ends in tears with regard to our investments. Yeah, yeah. We're going to talk more about investor psychology when we get the stock. I'm sorry, investor psychology when we get the stocks. And that, dear students, is the bottom line for mutual funds. Choose a fund family, stick with them. Reevaluate them periodically. Yeah, once a year, twice a year. But make changes judiciously and sparingly. As you approach retirement, migrate from stock funds to bond funds. Do not give up on stocks entirely, in my humble opinion, as you get to retirement. We'll see this later on, because people are living far longer in retirement, and that's when a balanced fund makes a whole lot of sense. Dollar cost average, $50 a month, $100 a month, whatever is affordable, what, for the most part, forget about them. Yeah, mutual funds will bore you to wealth. Don't be one of the mutual fund investors that does worse than your mutual funds. And that, dear students, is our discussion of investments for the masses, mutual funds. Go over it again. Make sure you can eloquently, I like that word, describe the theme, major themes that we've discussed to someone who has no idea about investing, no idea about mutual funds, and because you are going to be the investment guru for your friends, family, and coworkers, it is a weighty responsibility. Now, we are ready to start our long hike up the mountain, our long march. In chapter 3, we begin with the introduction to stocks. Thank you so much for being in our class. All of us at Southwestern are very proud of you. We are honored and privileged and happy you're with us.